Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call is 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGann. And while you're there on Twitter, going to GoForItGann, which is spelled GoForItGann, GANT. While you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGann. I hope you enjoyed that new music. New music, new show opening. It's great, 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 great new theme song produced by Charles Trahan. Shout outs to Charles Trahan for making some great, great music there. But a great show lined up for you today. Expect to be joined by Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler. You know him, I know him, the great Willie Rofe. And we're going to talk all things NFL with Willie Rofe, the 2-0 Eagles. We'll talk to Willie Rofe about his Saints who are struggling. And you look at it, the Saints and the Chiefs are playing this week, and two of Willie's former teams. So in the Willie Rofe Bowl, if you will, that's the Willie Rofe Bowl. The Saints and the Chiefs, 0-2. Both teams struggling mightily. Both teams can't stop me and you if we put 11 guys together. Those defenses have been awful. And those guys, again, couldn't stop me, couldn't stop you in a game. They just couldn't do it. I mean, those defenses have been bad, but that's the Willie Rofe Bowl. And we're going to talk to Willie about that at all as well. And I want to start right now with some of these 2-0 teams that are out here in the National Football League. Got a few 2-0 teams right now playing some good, decent NFL football right now. And a lot of surprise, some surprise 2-0 teams as well. One surprise is in Arizona with the Cardinals, who are 2-0 and went to Foxborough and beat the New England Patriots. Beat the mighty New England Patriots. Tom Brady doesn't lose at home. He just doesn't lose at home. That's just something he just does not do. And he lost at home to not Peyton Manning, not Aaron Rodgers, not Drew Brees. He lost to Kevin Cobb. We're talking about Kevin Cobb. But give the Cardinals a lot of credit. They went to New England and played a decent game of football. And that defense in New England's tough. I'm not in New England. In Arizona's tough. Tough defense there. Calais Campbell getting some good safety play. Kerry Rhodes, Adrian Wilson. You know, get Darrell Washington in the middle. I mean, they're getting some decent play from their defense. And their defense is playing very well. It's one of the reasons that this team is 2-0. Probably the main reason that this team is 2-0. I mean, their defense is the main reason that this team is 2-0. I can't say it's because of Kevin Cobb. I can't say it was obviously because of John Skelton. I can't say it at all because you look at their offense. I mean, they're 30th in passing yards a game, 28th in running the football. So, and they're middle of the pack in terms of defense. So this is a team right now, again, 30th in passing, 175 yards a game, and 28th in rushing. With 74 yards a game. So this is a team, obviously, that is getting it done by and through their defense. Their defense is what's getting it done in Arizona. And that is one of the reasons that the Arizona Cardinals are right now 2-0, sitting 2-0 and tied with the San Francisco 49ers on top of the NFC West at 2-0. So the Arizona Cardinals are 2-0, and obviously the San Francisco 49ers, they're real. They're legit. They're the truth. They are the truth. They're 2-0 as well. Again, Last week, they beat the Detroit Lions. And this is a team that's coming off a good victory against the Green Bay Packers. So this is a team that beat two decent teams and two playoff teams a year ago. San Francisco is a complete football team. There's no doubt about it. The run game is tight. Gore and those boys. The passing game, Alex Smith has been proficient. He's been getting it done, driving the football down the field for the 49ers. And, of course, that defense. That defense is getting it done. That defense has been getting it done for the 49ers. Has been getting it done for them, and they're 2-0. That's one of the main reasons that they're 2-0 right now. They're getting it done. The passing yards, I mean, they're 25th in terms of passing yards, offensive passing yards. So, I mean, they're not eye-popping, and to me it comes down to this. And the 49ers, yes, they'll be in the playoffs. Yes, they won the NFC West when it's all said and done. They're going to be there, but the reality is, and I'm going to keep saying this and keep saying this, kind of similar to LeBron James. In this respect, obviously LeBron James and Alex Smith in terms of skill set and talent, obviously they're not on par. But it's kind of like LeBron James in this vein. You weren't going to judge LeBron James on anything but winning a championship. That's it, bottom line, point blank. You weren't judging him on anything else but winning a championship. And I think that's where the 49ers are at this point. I mean, the pieces are there defensively. The pieces are there. In terms of what they have on the defensive side of football, the pieces are there in terms of the tight end, the running backs, the offensive line. Even the wide receivers are decent. The pieces are there for this team. The pieces are there. It all comes down to the man who touches the ball every play, and that is Alex Smith. It comes down to what he can do in a shootout type of situation, what he can do, and when his team needs to score points and his team needs them. It comes down to him. He's still a game manager. I'm not going to put game changer on him. And when it comes to quarterbacks, I put you in two categories. You're either a game manager or you're a game changer. And at this point, Alex Smith is still a game manager. He still is a game manager. It's not a guy you're gonna want throwing the football a whole bunch of times. You're not. You're not going to get a lot of throws out of Alex Smith. You're not. And you look at Alex Smith in terms of how many passes he's thrown. He's thrown 57 passes. To put it in context, Michael Vick threw 50-some-odd passes in week one against the Cleveland Browns. So, I mean, he's only thrown the ball 50-some-odd times. He's only thrown the ball 50-some-odd times this year. That's it. Only threw the ball 50-some-odd times this year. Not a lot. So the thing about it is this with Alex Smith. When it's all said and done, and I'm going to reiterate this and keep talking about this throughout the course of this season, because to me with the San Francisco 49ers, everything comes down to Alex Smith. Everything to me comes down to what Alex Smith can do in a pressure-packed situation, in a type of situation where he's going to have to put up points in order for his team to be successful. And that's it to me. But the 49ers are 2-0. How about the Atlanta Falcons? Another team, 2-0. An impressive performance against the Denver Broncos made Peyton Manning look very human, very ordinary, 3 interceptions in the first quarter. And this defense, it seems like they're playing much better. And, again, they're getting the points and they're getting the victories. This Falcon team is 2-0. We've been hearing about the Falcons over the past few years now. A lot of people had the Falcons as their pick as the Super Bowl champions last year. I remember Jamal Anderson, who we had on this show, he had the Falcons winning this whole thing. That was a year ago because you talked about the addition of Julio Jones, the addition of Ray Edwards, some of the things that this team has done to upgrade and bolster their roster. They're playing good football right now. And again, they got it done against the Denver Broncos, a team who I have in the Super Bowl, and a team who I think is going to be a very, very good football team when this thing is all said and done. When this thing is all said and done, Denver Broncos are going to be there in some way, shape, or form. They're going to be there. But the Falcons are 2-0. How about the Philadelphia Eagles now? Another team, 2-0. They're doing it in a weird, odd, strange way. I mean, 5 turnovers, including 4 interceptions by Michael Vick against the Cleveland Browns. They come back, 4 turnovers, including 2 interceptions by Michael Vick against the Baltimore Ravens. But guess what happened? Guess what happened? The Philadelphia Eagles are somehow, some way, 2-0. Michael Vick, 91-yard drive against the Cleveland Browns for the victory. He won it, went down the field against that ball club, against the Cleveland Browns, and he got it done. He got it done. That was Michael Vick. When the chips were down, he went 91 yards against the Cleveland Browns defense, and the Eagles eked out a 1-point victory. Same thing happened against the Baltimore Ravens, down 23-16. Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles did what they had to do against the Baltimore Ravens, 10 plays, 80 yards, and of course it culminated with a touchdown and a 1-point victory for the Philadelphia Eagles, and they moved to 2-0, and they moved to 2-0 in not the prettiest of fashions. They moved to 2-0 in 2 1-point victories. They moved to 2-0 despite 9 turnovers in 2 games. That's 4.5 turnovers per ball game, and somehow, some way, and that somehow, some way has been their defense, which has been played very well for the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, the addition of D'Amico Ryans has helped. Michael Kendricks, the linebacker they drafted, has helped. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie stepping in for Asante Samuel has helped. It seems to have helped so far. I mean, he's playing some good football, a big-time cover corner at this point in the season. Again, D'Amico Ryans, who had an interception and a sack against the Ravens, playing good football. The defense has stepped up. The defense has stepped up, and this was a defense a year ago who surrendered 5 fourth-quarter leads. 5 fourth-quarter leads. The bottom line for the Eagles is they have to continue. They have to try to protect the football. Obviously, they have to continue winning, but in order to continue to win, they have to protect the football. You got to protect the football. You can't expect to turn the football over 9 times and expect to win. You can't expect to turn the football over 4.5 times per game and expect to win. It's just not the recipe for success. And if they can get that taken care of, if they can clean up that part of their game, you're going to have to look out for this Eagle team because they are explosive. This is an explosive football team. Michael Vick and the Eagles, number 1 in passing yards on the offensive side of the ball, 8th in running the football. I mean, and you look at what they're doing on defense, they're 4th against the pass. So this is a defense that's playing well. This is an offense that's playing well. The only thing is those stinking turnovers. Those darn turnovers. You can't win when you turn the football over that many times. You can't win when you turn the football over that many times. You can't win, but somehow, some way, the Eagles are continuing to win, and they moved to 2-0. So another 2-0 team, and those two 2-0 teams get it on in Arizona in the Kevin Cobb-Michael Vick Bowl. I mean, Kevin Cobb against his old team, the Philadelphia Eagles, and Michael Vick travels, and his Eagles travel to Arizona to face the 2-0 Cardinals. Should be an interesting game. Because, like I said, the Cardinals are playing very well on the defensive side of football. They're not going to be able to score with Philadelphia because I don't think Kevin Cobb is going to be able to get it done. The offensive line is not that great. I don't think Kevin Cobb is going to be able to get it done. But the defensive side of football, and this is the Eagle team who has some issues on the offensive line. They lost their center, Jason Kelsey. He's gone for the year. Their left tackle, King Dunlap, he's out for the game. So you're missing two-fifths. Of your offensive line. And so missing that is going to be big for the Eagles, and we'll see if the Cardinals can take advantage of it, because this is a team that, again, they went into Foxborough and they did a great job against Tom Brady. And they shut Tom Brady down in New England Patriots, and they got a victory. Again, that doesn't happen very often. You don't go into Foxborough and beat Tom Brady. You just don't do it. You know, that's just a rarity. That's just something that just does not happen. It doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. And it was the first loss in 11 home openers since Gillette Stadium opened in 2002. So that tells you something. That tells you about the Patriots' dominance at home. That tells you about the Patriots' dominance at home. That tells you about their dominance. And they were dominant. They were dominant. They were dominant, the New England Patriots. And at home until the Arizona Cardinals came to town. The Arizona Cardinals, again, are 2. You know, so a lot of interesting storylines around the National Football League. And you still, I'm still trying to figure out who do I think. I mean, the Giants were impressive against Carolina. Shut down Cam Newton in that offense, and Eli Manning has been playing great football and continues to play great football and play great football Thursday night against the Panthers and great football Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they continue. The Giants continue playing good football, and I look at that NFC East and I say to myself, that's going to be a tough division. That's going to be a dogfight there. The Giants, the Cowboys, and the Redskins. The Redskins are going to be competitive, I think, this year. With RG3, they're going to be competitive. They're going to be competitive. So it's not going to be an easy game for the Cowboys, the Eagles, or the Giants when they play the Redskins. It's just not. It's not going to be an easy game. It's just not. This is a much different team in Washington with RG3. Again, not a playoff team, I don't think, but a team that's going to scare some teams, and a team that's going to be very hard to beat. A team that's going to be very, very hard to beat. So we'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what happens moving forward with the Washington Redskins team. And I was talking about the other 2-0 teams, and Houston, 2-0. But Houston at this point, I mean, they beat the Dolphins, and the Dolphins did beat the Raiders this week, but how good are those teams going to be all in all when it's all said and done? But Houston, 2 victories against Jacksonville and against Miami. So I got to see a little bit more before I start talking Houston, a lot of Houston Texans talk, but they are 2-0. They are 2-0. But let me see what happens when they play somebody with a pulse. In their division, I don't see any team with the pulse. You know, Indianapolis, maybe they'll be a tough team to beat. It's because of Andrew Luck, who I think is going to have a good year. But they're not going to they're not going to scare anybody. They may scare you, but they're not going to beat you. And I don't think the Colts are going to beat the Texans. And I don't think Jacksonville is going to beat. I see Houston with 6 wins already in their division. 6 wins in their division. But I have to see Houston when they play somebody with a pulse, and that somebody with a pulse will be the Denver Broncos this weekend. I'm going to hold off in terms of how I feel about the Texans. Let me see what they do this week against the Denver Broncos, a team coming off a loss on Monday night, and now a team that's playing at home. So, and Peyton Manning coming off an un-Peyton Manning-like performance, 3 interceptions in the first quarter. That's very un-Peyton Manning-like, obviously. So, let's see what happens. And I'm going to hold off judgment until I see what happens this weekend. 2-0 is impressive, yes. You got to beat the teams who you have to beat, and they blew them out 30-10 against the Dolphins, 27-7 against Jacksonville. So you definitely have to beat the teams who you have to beat, and they have beaten those teams, and they beat them soundly. So that's a good sign. That's truly a good sign. But let me hold off judgment about the Houston Texans until I see what they do this weekend against the Denver Broncos. Let me hold off a little judgment until I see something against the Denver Broncos this week in Denver. And to me, that should give me an idea of how I feel about the Houston Texans. I'm not in love with this team mainly because of their schedule. But I will say this. It's too early. It's too early. It's still early. And again, they are 2-0, but who have they beaten in those 2 football games? Jacksonville Jaguars You're not scared, right? The Miami Dolphins? You're not scared, right? Okay, let me see what happens this week against the Denver Broncos. And that should tell us a little bit about the Houston Texans. Just a little bit. Still early. And even if you're 0-2, even if your team is 0-2, even if your team is 0-2 like the New Orleans Saints, like the Kansas City Chiefs, even if your team is in a bad predicament, in a bad way, 0-2, even if your team is that, like the Cleveland Browns, like the Tennessee Titans, like the Oakland Raiders, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, don't give up. Don't give up, because anything can happen in the National Football League. And, again, this is a week-to-week league. Every week something different happens. Every week we have different opinions about different things, about different games, about different teams. So don't give up on your team at this point if you're fans of the Browns, fans of the Jaguars, fans of the Chiefs, fans of the Saints, fans of some of these 0-2 teams. I will say this. I don't think it's going to get much better in Jacksonville this year. I don't think it's going to get much better in Oakland this year. I don't think it's going to get much better in Tennessee this year. I don't think it's going to get much better in Cleveland this year. It could get better in New Orleans, I should say. It could get better in New Orleans this year. Could get better. Oakland. I mean, Kansas City, they got off to a rough start last year and they turned it around. So it could get better in Kansas City. It could get better in Kansas City. But I don't like their quarterback, Matt Castle. I'm just not much of a fan of Matt Castle. Never have. Probably never will be. I mean, he did lead his team to the playoffs one year. He did lead the Chiefs to the playoffs a couple of years back. But I'm not sold on him. I'm not a fan. And he did have some success in New England. That's how he got to Kansas City, and that's how he got that big contract in Kansas City because of his success in New England. But I'm not sold. I'm just not sold when it comes to Matt Castle. Will I be sold at some point? Maybe, possibly, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sold on this guy at this point. But that all could change. That all truly could change over time. But I'm not sold on Matt Castle, and I don't think I will be. I'm just not sold. So don't try to sell me on him, because I can't be sold. I don't like his delivery. I just don't like his game. I don't like his game. So we'll see. The Chiefs, again, off to a bad start a year ago. They got off to a bad start, and they turned it around. So anything is possible. They turned it around. They didn't make the playoffs, but they turned it around and played some competitive football down the stretch, including a victory against the Green Bay Packers, an undefeated Green Bay Packer team at the time a year ago. So Kansas City still could turn this thing around. Oakland, I don't think they can turn it around. I mean, obviously, that deal for Carson Palmer has just been a bad, awful situation for the Oakland Raiders. I hated the trade at the time. Hated that trade at the time for the Oakland Raiders. Hated the trade. And when I saw that trade go down, I'm saying to myself, Mike Brown is a stinking genius. He's a genius for holding the line with Carson Palmer and ultimately holding the line. And there was a desperate team out there. There was a desperate team out there in the Oakland Raiders, a team that had lost their quarterback in Jason Campbell, and a team that was desperate for a quarterback. They were desperate for a quarterback. They needed a quarterback. And guess what? That desperation, the Oakland Raiders did a desperate move. They did a desperate move in trading for Carson Palmer. They gave up a lot. They gave up a lot for Carson Palmer. Mike Brown, you are a genius, because look how good you look now, because you have a quarterback in Andy Dalton. You have a quarterback in Andy Dalton. A quarterback who seems to be the real deal. He seems to be the real deal. And again, you're a Raiders team that gave up a 2012 first-round draft pick, a conditional second-round draft pick in 2013. Wow. And that could go up to a first, but it probably won't because the Raiders, and only way it could have went up to a first-round pick in 2013 if the Raiders would get to the AFC title game in the next 2 years. And obviously they didn't get there last year. And judging by the way they're playing this year, they're not going to get there in 2012. So the Oakland Raiders are stuck with a quarterback who I think is done. I mean, Carson Palmer was awful his final year in Cincinnati. He was awful. And he has not been that great so far. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 670 yards. Numbers aren't awful, but he's just not your quarterback of the future. He's not your quarterback now, I should say. He's just not. He's not. And I think Oakland, if they had to do it all over again, if they could take it back. And Hugh Jackson, I mean, he was going for it. He felt like, you know what, an opportunity to get to – I had an opportunity to get to the playoffs. I had an opportunity to get to the playoffs. My team was playing well with Jason Campbell. And who knows, with Carson Palmer, maybe Carson Palmer can come in, stabilize my quarterback position moving forward. Moving forward. Obviously, it does not look good. It does not look good at this point. And Hugh Jackson had the power at the time, and this was around after the death of Al Davis. He had the power. He had the power to make the moves, and he made the move. Excuse me. He made the move. He felt like his team was good enough to get to the playoffs. He gave up a lot, an absolute lot. And the Raiders have been 4-8 ever since that trade. 4-8. Four games below 500 ever since the Carson Palmer trade. That tells you all you need to know. It was a bad move by the Raiders. They gave up so much. So much for Carson, just to get the services of Carson Palmer. A guy at the time who I thought was done. I really thought was a done player. He was done to me. I didn't see anything out of Carson Palmer that led me to believe that a first-round draft pick, a first and a second for Carson Palmer. Did Carson Palmer show you anything in his final year in Cincinnati to warrant a first and a second-round draft pick for him? I don't know what you saw, but I know what I saw. I saw an interception machine in Carson Palmer in Cincinnati. I saw an interception machine there. The guy, to me, excuse me, has never been the same since that injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. He's not been the same guy. He's been a different guy. His final year in Cincinnati, 26 touchdowns, but 20 big interceptions. 20 big interceptions. He wasn't the guy. Ever since that injury, he has not been the same. Has not been the same guy. And I'm not sure if he ever will be the same guy. 33 years old. 33 years old. So I think we know at this point, when we look back at this deal years from now, we will probably say that the Raiders messed up here. We will probably say this was a panic move by the Raiders. And any time haste makes waste, and any time you start rushing, any time you start panicking, you do bad things, and bad things tend to happen. It's like a woman who wants to date a man. Who wants to date somebody bad, just wants to be with somebody, and they'll do anything to be with somebody, and because they're panicking, because they feel like no one can love me, no one will ever love me, no one will ever want to be with me. They start panicking, and guess what they do? Guess what they do? They get involved in a bad situation, all because they're panicking, and they feel like no one can love them, no one will ever love them, and they just want to be loved. And that kind of leads me to my next story. kind of leads me to my next story, and that is the whole situation, Chad Johnson and Evelyn Lozada. Well, the divorce is official. Their divorce has been finalized. Chad Johnson and Evelyn Lozada, a Basketball Wives fame, are no longer together. Did not last long, folks. And Chad Johnson, again, yesterday, he pleaded no contest to domestic battery. He will get probation for allegedly headbutting his wife at the time, Evelyn Lozada. I mean, it was quick, about 6 weeks, a six-week marriage. I mean, it didn't last long. And so just like that, it's over. A snap of the finger, it is over. So, again, pleaded no contest. I said domestic battery, domestic violence charge involving his then-wife, Evelyn Lozada. And at this point, it's done. Chad Johnson, years probation, and also he will have to undergo some counseling. And it leads me back to panicking, and I talked about sometimes women make mistakes and get with guys because they believe no one will love them. And that leads me to Chad Johnson's ex-wife, Evelyn Lozada, who appeared on a Yon LeVan Sands, her show, Fix My Life, on, I guess, the OWN Network, as Oprah's Network. And anyway, Evelyn went on there and she talked about some interesting things, but she talked about one thing that reminded me of the Carson Palmer trade. And it's weird how Evelyn Lozada could remind you of Carson Palmer, but it just reminded me of the whole Carson Palmer trade. Because the Carson Palmer trade to me was obviously a panic move by the Raiders at the time. A team, again, they lost Jason Campbell to an injury, and they felt like they were good enough to compete, and they felt like Carson Palmer could be the one that could get them to that next level, to that next stop, and ultimately to the playoffs. But, obviously, Carson Palmer's not the guy, and obviously they gave up so much. First round 2012, conditional first rounder in 2013, could be a first rounder if the Raiders got to the AFC title game. That's not going to happen, obviously, so it's going to be a second rounder in 2013. But anyway, a panic move by the Raiders. And Evelyn, she talked about this on the show, and she talked about, in some respects, she felt like she could never be loved by anybody. She felt like she could not be loved by anybody. And one of the reasons she said, and she talked about her relationship with Chad Johnson, and he was obviously running around on her, according to Evelyn. And so ultimately, and she knew that even before they got married, that he was running around and doing things that he wasn't supposed to be doing in a committed relationship. But guess what? Evelyn felt like, you know what, no one could love me. So she panicked. And when you panic, you make bad decisions. And she panicked and she married Chad Johnson. A few weeks later, she gets headbutted, bruised up her head and whatnot. And now she's in divorce with Chad Johnson. He's out of a job. And the whole situation just blew up. The whole situation blew up in everybody's faces. I mean, they had a reality TV show coming along. And, you know, we were supposed to look at their marriage and enjoy their reality TV show, look at their wedding. And it was a nice, big, huge, beautiful wedding. Cost a lot of money. And we were supposed to all watch it and watch their relationship unfold on reality TV, but just didn't work out that way. And Chad Johnson has said he wants to go to some anger management classes and help him out with his anger. And he initially, and to me, I always felt like Chad was guilty. Just looking at the whole situation, I just felt like Chad was guilty in what he did. I felt like he was guilty all along. I know, and we all know what we've seen on reality TV with Evelyn and some of the things she's done. We've seen all that. We know all that. But and so you felt like maybe there was a shred of possibility. There was always the possibility that Evelyn was the aggressor. You felt like there always was that possibility. You did. You always felt like there was that possibility. But as it turns out now, Chad Johnson pleads no contest, and no contest is not guilt. You're not admitting guilt. You're not admitting innocence or anything. You basically put yourself on the mercy of the court in a lot of ways. But a no contest plea in this situation tells me that Chad is guilty of domestic violence and domestic battery and guilty of headbutting his then-wife, Evelyn Lozada. But it comes down to this. Evelyn felt no one would love her. Evelyn felt she could not find a man to be with her. And judging by some of her behavior on basketball-wise, you may understand why she may have felt that way. But at the end of the day, she knew she wasn't supposed to marry Chad Johnson. She did it anyway. Did it anyway. And we all saw the end result. She panicked. So, Carson Palmer, trade, Evelyn Lozada. I have somehow merged those two together in somehow, some way. And those are two situations where people panicked. Hugh Jackson, then former coach of the Raiders that time last year, coach of the Raiders last year, Hugh Jackson, he panicked. Evelyn Lozada, she panicked as well, and she got involved in a bad situation. Now you wonder what's next for Chad Johnson. Evelyn, now we know what's going to happen with her. She's going to talk about domestic violence and use this as some sort of platform. I look at that interview and I felt some compassion for her, but at the same time, it's kind of hard for me to have full-fledged compassion because of some of the antics I've seen on Basketball Watch. Becomes a little difficult. Again, it's no excuse for any man to lay their hands on a woman. It's no excuse whatsoever. You can understand how it could happen sometimes, but at the end of the day, it's no excuse. It's no excuse. There's times women may push you to that point, but that's when you have to be a man, and that's why you're a man for a reason. Men have to do things sometimes that is not always easy. It's not always easy to walk away from a situation, even man, woman, or what have you. It's not always easy to walk away from a situation. It's not, especially when you're heavily involved and so emotionally involved in it. It's not easy to walk away from a situation, but sometimes you have to be a man about it. You're the dominant sex here. It's physically. You're dominant. So you have to be a man about it. And Chad Johnson, unfortunately, was not a man about it. And it cost him. Cost him his job. Cost him his reality TV show. Cost him his wife. So it cost him all those things. It cost him all those things. And now you look at Chad Johnson. He has a tattoo of Evelyn on his leg. Has a picture of her on his leg. I wouldn't be surprised if these two got back together. You know, at this point, Evelyn has to do what she has to do in terms of trying to rehab her image, in terms of trying to push her message, if you will, and keep herself viable moving forward. So I wouldn't be surprised Chad goes to an anger management classes a year or two from now. He decides, you know what, I'm good now. Goes on a bunch of interviews. He's good. Evelyn says, you know what, I've noticed a change in Chad. He's a different guy. And I wouldn't be surprised if these two got back together a year from now, 2 years from now. I wouldn't be shocked at all. I wouldn't be shocked at all. I wouldn't be shocked at all. Matter of fact, I predict it. I think it will happen. These two will be back together a year or two from now. I just feel it. Just a feeling. I could be wrong. I may be wrong, but I doubt it. Anyway, Chad Johnson, what happens to him moving forward? Does he get another opportunity? I said when this whole situation happened a few weeks back that I don't think Chad Johnson will get another opportunity this year. And I think he's going to have to fight for another opportunity next year. This was a perfect situation for Chad, going to Miami, a team that desperately needed his services. The Miami Dolphins needed Chad Johnson. They need a wide receiver. They could have used the services of Chad Johnson. They really could. They could have used his services. And Chad had a perfect situation, an opportunity to resurrect his career, coming off a 15-catch season in New England. He had an opportunity to resurrect his career in Miami, where it all started for him, an opportunity of a lifetime for him in Miami. Go home and be the Chad Johnson of old. You had that he had that opportunity, and he blew it. He flat out blew it. And you wonder, does Chad get another shot? not this year. I don't think he gets another shot this year. And I think he's going to have to work very hard, a la T.O., to get another shot a year from now. And you wonder with T.O. if he'll ever get another opportunity after getting cut by the Seattle Seahawks. You wonder if he gets another opportunity. I don't know. I just don't know. I'd be shocked. I'll be shocked if T.O. gets another shot, at least this year. I mean, but he's only getting older. 38 years old, he's only going to get older. You don't get younger in life. The clock doesn't go back. The clock only moves forward. The clock continues to move. It don't stop. 1:40 Eastern Standard Time right now, and guess what's going to happen? It's going to be 1:41 at some point. So the clock don't keep moving. It's not going to turn back to 1:39. It's just not. It's not going to turn back to 39 after the hour. And guess what? It just moved. 41. 1:41. So the clock just moved. It moved forward. You get my point? You get my point? You catch my drift? Time stands still for no one. Time does not go back. Time moves forward. It moves forward. It's moving forward right now. It's moving forward for T.O., moving forward for Chad Johnson. It's moving forward for all these guys. Time just does not stop for anyone. Doesn't stop for anyone. It doesn't stop. And so, T.O. is only going to get older. Chad Johnson is only going to get older. And the reality is of those two guys' situation, it could be over. It could be over. And for T.O., you hope that it ends well because as of right now, he has financial issues. You don't know about Chad Johnson's issues in terms of money, but T.O. has financial issues. We know about those financial issues. So you wonder, what will he do moving forward? You wonder, what could he do moving forward? You feel bad for all these guys, and even Vince Young came out this week that he's having some financial difficulties. It's just sad, sad state of affairs to see guys. And Vince Young made a lot of money in his career, at least made enough to keep himself stable at this point of his life. I mean, when he first was drafted back in 2006, he had guaranteed money of $25 million. And at this point, all reports are he's struggling financially and he's broke. And there was a story I saw, Clay Travis of OutKickTheCoverage.com talked about some of the stories about Vince Young and his spending habits. Apparently, Vince Young used to spend $5,000 a week, which is $20,000 a month, at the Cheesecake Factory. At one point, Vince Young spent $6,000 at TGI Fridays. At one point, Vince Young purchased 120 seats on a Southwest Airlines flight. You can't be stable financially spending $5,000 a week at the Cheesecake Factory and buying 120 seats on a Southwest flight. You can't be financially stable doing those type of things. Speaking of a guy who's financially stable and a guy who's done a lot in his career, let's bring him in now. Hall of Famer, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Well, I just don't understand. What are you spending $5,000 a week at the Cheesecake Factory? Oh, what are you buying?
Cheesecake.
What are you
feeding? Cheesecakes.
That's unheard of.
I mean, it's kind of something. It's sad. I mean, it's sad. I mean, and who needs to buy 120 seats on a Southwest Airlines flight? I mean, how stupid is that?
When you talk about one flight, who did he buy all those for?
It doesn't say who he bought it all. Who he bought all those seats for? But This is according to an article in OutKickTheCovers.com. I mean, this is apparently they're saying that this is some of the things he did. And ultimately it adds up. And I know he has a lawsuit right now against his former agent who allegedly took some money from him as well. So it's a difficult situation, Will. And we talked about this athletes and money on this show all the time. When you hear these type of things, how sad is that for you to hear those type of things, to hear that Vince Young could be struggling financially?
Well, it's very sad because this guy had a very promising career, and now that you hear that this is going on, you know, that can explain some of the reason why he's lost his focus. I mean, you think about it, the kid came in the league, you know, these guys don't have any proper management. They don't have anybody helping them financially, anybody trying to put them on a budget to put some structure in the kid's life. Obviously, you know, things probably aren't the best with his family because, look what's happening to the kid. And, on top of probably helping his family out, and you hear these stories, and you got to think about this, Paul. When you're dealing with all this and he's trying to stay focused on playing football, some guys can handle it, and I think that's why we haven't seen the potential of the Vince Young that we could have seen the last couple of years. And then he's young. He's thinking, he's looking at what these top quarterbacks are making. And he went to the Pro Bowl 1 year, his rookie, second year, I can't remember, and had a couple good years in Tennessee. But, you know, he's thinking, I'm going to be making, you know, $10-15 million a year in a couple of years with Tennessee. He's not thinking he's going to be out the league right now. He's thinking that he's going to be in Tennessee, and football's never going to end, and he's going to be making this top flight money. And it just didn't work out. And, you know, look what happens.
I mean, very sad. And apparently reports are he did spend, we talked about the Cheesecake Factory, and he did that during his 2006 rookie season, $5,000 a week. That's unheard of. That's a lot of cheesecake.
Who's letting him do this to? You know, who's not going up to this kid? If he's spending $5,000 a week at the Cheesecake Factory, you think people aren't talking about this? You think we talked about this before, Paul. You think the team and people don't know that this kid is spending $5,000 a week and nobody's even telling him and talking to him? Everybody's down there talking about it. So it's small. It's Tennessee. You know they knew this kid was spending money like that. So somebody's got to take him under the wing, somebody with the organization or player development, somebody, and try to slow him down. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Nobody can talk to the kid.
You're right, but I guess at the end of the day, I guess it really doesn't become their problem. I mean, if he's somewhat producing on the field, it doesn't really become their problem. But you're right, somebody needs to look out for him. But at the same time, if you're a certain age and you got a lot of money, you feel like no one can tell you anything. And
well,
unfortunately, it seems like no one can tell him anything, and now he may be paying the price for that whole situation, but hopefully he gets another opportunity. Hopefully he gets another chance and he can reclaim his life in some respect and someone will give him another chance. I think he does have talent. I think he does have ability. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Vince Young. And moving forward, Willie, let's look at some of these 2-0 teams. And one team is the Philadelphia Eagles, 2-0, but 9 turnovers in 2 games. But Michael Vick has channeled his inner John Elway. 2 game-winning drives against the Browns, against the Ravens. What do you make of the 2-0 Eagles, Willie?
They're 2-0, but they're not. You know, the good thing about it is they're not playing their best football. Michael Vick's got to play a lot better, and they're still 2-0. So that's a positive sign. But they've got to play better football because when it comes time to beating some of these real, real good teams, when they have to face the Giants, who are playing excellent football right now, they're gonna play some good teams in the division, and it's gonna be tough. But Washington's gonna be in the mix this year too, I think. But I like the fact they're 2-0. They got a lot of talent, but you know, the key is going to be what's Vic going to do in during the course of the season. Because sooner or later, if you keep turning the ball over, it's going to catch up with you, and you and I both know that ball.
And logically, you would think it would have caught up to him this week against the Ravens, a team who's a Super Bowl contending football team, a very good football team, and it didn't.
How did Flacco play?
Flacco played okay, and I mean the Eagles defense had something to do with that. The Eagles defense did have something to do with that.
Okay, but Flacco, doesn't he do this every year?
He does. I mean, I'm
he
not.
He does it every year, right?
He does. He does.
Okay. Thank you.
He has his moments where you say, wow, this is a top 10, top flight quarterback. And then he has his moments where you're saying, he's just okay. And last week was one of those moments where you say, he's just okay. And Willie, your Saints, and let's look at the opposite side now. Your Saints, 0-2, defense continues to struggle. 75 points in two games, that's not good. Last in total defense, even Drew Brees is having struggles. No Sean Payton, Willie. But can the Saints and will the Saints turn this thing around?
I thought the Saints would be better than this. I really did.
I agree.
The Saints would get off to a fast start. I thought they would be motivated and hungry. And like you said, Drew Brees is throwing a pick six in the first quarter, backed up in your own end zone. You can't throw that ball. I mean, you can't throw that ball in Carolina. And obviously we saw what the Giants did to Carolina. So
right.
if that's any indication of how the Saints are, then it's not good. But anytime you get giving up over 30, I played on some teams. At least our defense at least tried to show up. But I played on some teams where we were scoring a whole bunch of points when I first got to Kansas City, and we couldn't stop anybody. And we were scoring 30, so that's not a good feeling. When you're sitting on that sideline and you score up and down the field on somebody and they're just giving it back up, then it deflates you because you're thinking, okay, they're ever going to stop this team. I mean, we can go out here on the road and score all these points and do put up all these numbers every year, but what are they going to do defensively? I mean, the defense has got to make some stops in some key situations. But like you said, Drew Brees is struggling some. They don't look in sync, really, on both sides of the ball.
Well, here's something that might make you feel better about your Saints. 2007, Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator with the Giants at the time, the first two games in that 2007 season, the Giants gave up 80 points. And we all know what happened with that Giants team in the Super Bowl. This was a team that turned it around, got to the Super Bowl, and beat the Patriots. So, things can turn around. That might make you feel better.
Okay. It's all personnel, too, now. I think his personnel with the Giants was a little bit better than the personnel with the Saints.
Tuck, Umanura.
Thank you.
Yeah, a little better.
Thank you.
You're right. But maybe it'll make you feel better. And Willie, speaking of the Saints and the Chiefs, I mean, tomorrow's the Willie Rolfe Bowl. You got the Saints and the Chiefs, both of these teams 0-2, both of these two teams struggling on the defensive side of football, giving up a whole bunch of points. Who wins that game, Willie, in the Willie Rolfe Bowl?
The Willie Rolfe Bowl, where it been played? It's played in New Orleans?
It's played in New Orleans, yes.
I would go with the Saints at home against the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs are struggling, too. And I mean, they got so much money they're paying some of these kids on the defensive side of the ball. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, the cornerback, the DN, these guys are making $10 million a year, or whatever, and they're not doing anything. I mean, how do you pay Romeo Crennel, the D corner? They look like they were playing pretty good last year. You get everybody back, and these kids don't even look like they know how to play football. I mean, I think about that, man, and I'm like, how do these kids struggle so much week in, week out, playing solid football? You can't show up and play 1 week. You got to show up and play every week. And these kids nowadays, they just don't show up and play. Paul, I don't understand it.
I mean, it's like you said, the Chiefs last year, their defense was playing very well, and this was a team that beat the Green Bay Packers and did a great job against Aaron Rodgers near the end of last season. And this year, it's been a totally different situation in Kansas City. And it looks like, to you, Willie, in the Willie Rolfe Bowl, looks like the Saints will win. And I agree with you. I don't see the Saints losing to the Chiefs at home to go 0-3. I don't see that happening. But we shall see. We're talking Hall of Famer Willie Rolfe. And Willie, Peyton Manning last week, 3 picks in the first quarter in a loss to the Atlanta Falcons. There has been talk about his arm strength issues. It may not be the same. A lot of people saying it's not the same. Should the Broncos be concerned?
If I was the Broncos, I would be a little concerned. I mean, you know, the guy, first of all, he's had his neck fused 3 or 4 times. Most guys retire when they start doing that neck fusion stuff, they retire. So, you know, let's see what happens. But, you know, it's week 2. He says he's rusty. He says he's working the rust off. But he looked bad. He looked bad last week. And we can't say that he had anybody in his face. He had plenty of time. The pocket was protected very well. He just threw some terrible football into some coverages where the safeties were dropping in zone or the corners were zone. You know, it'd be one underneath, one under the top. They were bracketing those receivers. Now, I don't know if maybe they're not running enough routes or mixing it up, or he's not being able to change the calls. But some of those balls, Paul, they just look horrible. It was like, who's he throwing the ball to? He's got the safety right over the top or dropping back, and he's throwing the ball. You would think he could see the guy.
And it was some bad balls that he threw. I mean, and you can't help but throw some bad balls when you throw 3, 4 first quarter interceptions. I mean, it was bad. It was bad there for a while. I thought I was looking at Tim Tebow for a minute there. So it was bad for Peyton Manning. But ultimately, I think he turns it around. I think he does turn it around. And I think it starts this week against, allegedly, the best team in Texas, your Houston Texans.
He's going to get hit this week against the Houston Texans. And don't they have one of the best defenses in the NFL? One of the top defenses in the NFL?
They are one of the top defenses in the NFL. They are, and they're playing. But let me cool you down a little bit on the Houston Texans. Yes, they had a good defense last year, but let's look at the teams they played so far. Let's look at the teams they played. They played the Miami Dolphins, who did beat the Oakland Raiders last year, but how good are the Raiders going to be when it's all said and done? And a team that beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. So they beat 2 teams with a combined record of 0-4. To me, this week will show me a lot about the Houston Texans going into Denver, the Broncos coming off a Monday night loss. This is going to show a lot to me. This is going to show some things to me. You would agree with that?
I would agree with that. It is going to show. We'll see what they can do. And what we need to see this week is a good dose of Foster running the football, play action, keep Peyton off the field. Let's not let him get in the rhythm. Because that's the best thing Atlanta did was never let Peyton, until later, get going. If you let Peyton get going and get in the rhythm, get in the flow of the game, he'll pick you apart. But you got to hit him and then keep him off the field. So that's going to be the key to him. What can Foster do this year? Can they eat the clock up and keep Peyton Manning off the field? And we'll see if they can do that. Because when he played against the Steelers early in the game, he was struggling a little bit, which we see he struggles early. And then once he got going, especially that second half, he picked the Steelers apart. So it seems that Peyton tends to struggle early. So let's see if the Texans can get after him early, get a lead, and slow him down in the second half. Because that's how he beat the Pittsburgh Steelers the other week.
And you talked about the Houston Texans. Yes, they are number one in total defense. They are number one in total defense and giving up only 8.5 points per game. Mm. But let me remind you, Ryan Tannehill and Blaine Gabbert were the 2 quarterbacks that they faced in those 2 games. So the numbers look good, but let's not get too excited just yet.
Okay.
Just yet. We'll see this week against Denver. That's going to show us.
They're still the best team in Texas. They're still the best team in Texas.
Well, the Cowboys, I mean, the two teams the Cowboys
the four
have
boys.
Faced, they faced the Giants, who are now 2-1. And Giants have looked great these last 2 weeks. I mean, against Tampa Bay, they were down early, but Eli came back 510 yards passing.
Paul, another thing I wanted to mention on the show that you didn't have. Did you see that ball Eli threw on a rope right over that linebacker's head in that game? Is Eli Manning the best quarterback in football? Is he the best quarterback right now, today, if you ask me? I take Eli. Before I take, with the way Breeze is struggling, with the way Peyton is playing, Aaron Rodgers, I would take Eli Manning. With Tom Brady, I would take Eli Manning right now.
I don't think I could argue with you. I mean, a lot of those guys that you mentioned are really not off to a great start. They're really not off to a great start. And Eli Manning is off to a tremendous start. He's playing some big time football. He's played this way for the past 2 years.
Now, yes, it's 2 years now.
Right. I mean,
he's making a statement. Am I the best quarterback in football right now? I feel like Eli Manning is the best quarterback in football.
Well, let's start with his family. Is he the best Manning at this point?
Oh, definitely. Definitely the best Manning. He's got two rings on his resume. Look at the way he's throwing the ball. I'm putting it on the rope. Yes, he's so fast. Peyton is 36 years old. Eli's, in his prime right now. Manning had that neck surgery. We don't know how his arm feels every day. We just don't know how Peyton feels. And I don't think I don't think Peyton can gauge sometimes is during the course of the game, he might think he's throwing the ball hard, but maybe he's not. He feels like he is. But he doesn't have this arm strength where he can put the zip on it like he used to. And if we will see during the course of the year if it becomes a factor. And if it does, what do you do? If he doesn't have a strength, do you see if it gets better, or do you have to go put somebody else in the game? Now, I don't think they put somebody else in the game. They would let Peyton play, try to let him play through it. But it'll be an interesting year to see what happens with Peyton. But I will say Eli Manning is the best quarterback in football.
And to me, I can't really argue with that. I mean, I really can't argue with that. I mean, he's playing some lights-out football. He really, truly is. And that kind of makes the Cowboys case. It makes the Cowboys – I know you're saying Houston's the best team in Texas, but the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, they played the New York Giants, who are now 2-1. They played the Seattle Seahawks, who are now 1-1.
They didn't show up.
They didn't show up.
Now, come on now. You got to show up. If you want to talk about them being the best team in football or being the best team in Texas, they have to show up. They didn't show up and play against the game in Seattle.
Seattle's a tough place. It's a tough place to win in. It's a tough place to win in Seattle. You got that 12th man up there. It's always been a tough place to play in. And I agree. You do have to show up. And at this point, I can't remember, even though the Texans have beaten two teams who are a combined – well, not, I said 0-4. They are a combined 1-3 because the Dolphins did beat the Raiders last week. But even though the Texans haven't really not played teams, two good teams, they've been impressive. They dominated them. They've blown them out. So at this point, I would have to agree with you. The best team in Texas is Houston. I can't really argue that point.
And if Andre Johnson stays healthy, they have a true receiver, number one receiver, that can do big things week in, week out. They got Foster. They're solid on the offensive and defensive line where the game starts. Keep Schaub healthy. But that with the offensive and defensive line they have and the linebackers, they can wreck some havoc. And we'll see if Peyton can snap out of it because he's playing another top-flight defense this week. Just even better. Well, I don't know if what the scheme they're going to use, but I think they're better up front. And maybe if they can put some pressure on Peyton, it could be a long afternoon. It could be.
And, Willie, I forgot to get this in last week, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. We saw Jay Cutler a week ago push his offensive lineman, basically in a lot of ways showing him up. You're an offensive lineman, obviously, Willie. You did it. You're one of the best who have ever done it at your position. If that was to happen to you, if Jay Cutler were to push a Willie Rofe on the sideline like that in public during a game, how would you have reacted?
You know, you can't react during the game. I definitely would have said something to him after the game and been like, look, if you got a problem with me, address me in the locker room and talk to me one-on-one about it. You can't push a guy and do that when you're supposed to be the leader of your team, the leader of your organization. You're the quarterback. You have to keep your composure. Yes, this kid, Webb, was getting beat and doesn't look like he's, you know, focused. He's focusing right, and he needs to work on his technique, and he needs to get a lot better. But Jay Cutler is the leader of that team. He has to show his composure, and he has to get him, you know, try to get him motivated in a way to motivate him. The way he went about it isn't going to motivate him. It's going to maybe not motivate him to do what he needs to do. So I say he's got to grow up and learn how to be a motivation. But, you know, these kids are making a lot of money. And, you know, they're making a lot of money, and they aren't putting up the top flight numbers year in and year out. So, you know, you really can't, you know, it's a different day and age with the way they play. You know, I mean, they don't, you know, when you're making that kind of money, you don't really care. So, you know, it's just a situation where, You gotta watch this. Another thing about Vince Young, I mean, it was his rookie year. He had been to the rookie symposium. He had been to your rookie year. You have to go to all those meetings about finance and stuff like that. So, for whatever reason, Vince Young just never even heeded what people were telling him coming into the league. He just never listened. He just was gonna do things his way. And when you do things your way, and you don't listen to people, and when they're trying to tell you to help you, then, I mean, that's when you get yourself in a situation like this, and it's hard to concentrate on football when you got people calling you, trying to collect money all day about different stuff. It would be very hard to focus.
We're talking to Hall of Famer Willie Rofe, and Willie, speaking of a guy who's had some issues off the field, Chad Johnson pleaded no contest yesterday to a domestic violence charge with his then-wife, Evelyn Lozada, who they are now divorced. It was quick. Wasn't very long, about 6-8 weeks, something like that. Wasn't very long, but they're now divorced. He received probation. At this point, I don't think Chad Johnson gets a chance this year, but will Chad get another chance at any point?
No, I think Chad is going to go to the booth. He's going to be on Inside NFL this week. I think Chad needs to try to work on his commentary skills and let football go. That what he was dealing with, that was nothing but, that wasn't a wedding. That was just an expensive date, expensive months of spending
party.
Money with someone. That wasn't, so if he wanted to, you know, with the marriage of lies anyway, I doubt it. But he was just doing some real expensive dating. And hopefully Chad does well. You know, he had a very, very good football career. But when you start to lose it and you lose focus, you can't play in the National Football League. It is too tough a game, too tough a sport. You have to be dedicated and focused. And when you lose that focus and lose that drive, you can try to cover it up with all this other stuff. But that's basically what happened. Chad lost the desire to compete. It was hard for him to learn all the positions on the field the receivers were playing in both New England and in Miami. And with those type of systems, you have to be able to know what everybody's doing. And if you can't do it, then it's time for you to move on. And then, you know, it's time for him to move on. He's got a great personality. So hopefully the TV deal works out for him.
I do think he gets one more shot. I don't think it'll happen this year. I think that his shot will happen next year. But I'm not going to say he's going to stick on a roster, but I think he gets a shot. Like a T.O. this year. I mean, T.O. got a shot. Obviously, he couldn't stick on a roster. And I think that's a similar situation with Chad. I think he's going to get another opportunity It's not going to happen this year, but I'm not sure if he's going to stick with it. I think he gets another shot. Whether he's on the opening day roster is a far different story.
Well, what if he gets a TV deal that's going to pay him $300,000-$400,000 a year? $500,000 a year? Are you going to take that shot to play for the minimum for $800,000, $825,000 or whatever it is? To either try out for a roster? Because he was trying out for a roster, that's why he didn't have a deal kind of set with some of the networks. If he gets a deal with the networks, it's going to pay him $300,000-$400,000 a year. And if he stays out of trouble, he might be able to make some other little endorsement money. Then I don't think it's worth it for him to come back and play football if he can generate, you know, money off the field and he's doing some type of commentary work, which I think he will be in a booth somewhere next year. So I say if it's going to be similar money, then he just stays out the booth. He stays in the booth and doesn't go back to trying to play football.
See, I think he wants to try to redeem himself, and I think he's going to try to redeem himself. I'm not saying he's going to be successful, but I think he's going to try to redeem himself. And to your point, I mean, it may not be a bad idea to think about the commentary thing. Like you said, he has a great personality, and I think he would be good on any network. But at this point, if you're a network and he's having this situation, you almost have to wait. I know you almost have to wait a little bit, almost to let this situation die down, to give him that shot.
Well, it looks like he's already doing some work with the inside NFL starting this week, so I think he's already getting a shot. So I don't know what else he plans on doing, but I think he, you know, like he's got a great personality. He's, you know, he's a guest appearance on Inside NFL, and maybe they keep him all year. But like I said, we'll see what happens. But I'm saying if he has more deals come across the table next year, I say he doesn't even go back and play football or try to make a roster.
Right. We'll see. I mean, I hope he does get another shot, but I'd be shocked. And, well, he does have a tattoo of his ex-wife on his leg, so maybe they'll get – I'm predicting, Willie, and I predicted this earlier. I'm going to make this prediction. I think they get back together. I think, you know, what's going to happen is they're going to wait this whole situation die down. Chad's going to say he's got the help that he needed. She's going to say that he got the help, and they're all going to come back together. You'll see. About a year from now, these two will be back together. He has a tattoo of her, for crying out loud, on his leg. They'll get back together.
Unless she finds some other, entertainer, celebrity, something like that to go out with that is doing some big things. Because if she's looking for somebody, she's looking for somebody that's going to help her get ratings and help her do stuff on her show. So if she finds somebody that can do a little better job than that and not headbutt in the car, then maybe she goes that route. So we'll see. But it matters, you know, she's an attractive young lady. And,
she's
a very good looking woman. And she'll have opportunities to meet a lot of people.
Definitely. We'll see how many people she does meet. But I predict a year from now she will be back with Chad Johnson. You'll see. And Willie, as always, we can't let you go without getting your top five. You had the 49ers number one this week, last week, I should say, and I don't think that changes much. But what happens 2 through 5?
We'll have the 49ers. Let me take care. 49ers. They have Green Bay up there?
You had them in the 5, I believe.
Green Bay. Houston Texans. Atlanta Falcons.
Okay. So you got Green Bay, you got Houston, you got 49ers, Green Bay, Houston, the Falcons, and one more.
Man, the Patriots got beat by Arizona last week, didn't they?
They did. In Foxborough.
They beat them in Foxborough?
They beat them in Foxborough.
The Broncos look terrible.
How about the 2-0 Eagles?
I can't put them in there yet.
Wow.
I mean, I would have to put the Eagles in for Baltimore. They beat Baltimore. I would have to throw the Eagles in the mix, wouldn't I?
I think you would.
Would I have to throw them? I mean, I guess I would have to throw. I'm gonna throw the Giants in there.
The Giants, okay.
I'm gonna throw the Giants in there ahead of the Eagles. So I got San Francisco, Green Bay, Houston, Atlanta, and the Giants. I can't put the Eagles in yet.
Well, mine looks a little different from yours. I got the 49ers at one, the Eagles in at two, an impressive performance against the Ravens. Even with four turnovers, they found a way to beat a very good team.
They got nine turnovers. I can't put them in the top five with nine turnovers in 2 weeks.
It doesn't. That's just style points.
Okay.
Style points don't. It's just style points.
They won't beat the Giants like that.
I agree.
Go ahead. What's your top five?
Houston at three. I'm going to keep the Ravens in there at four. Again, that was a tough game against a tough football team in Philadelphia. The Ravens are still a very good football team. I'm going to keep them at four. And I'm going to go with the Packers at five.
Packers all the way down to five?
I got the Packers at five.
Huh. Okay.
But at this point, I would have to agree when it's all said and done. If we were picking a Super Bowl team at this point, week two, you would have to say the 49ers. Just look. In football, you don't get many complete teams anymore because of free agency and everything. You don't get many complete teams. This is a complete team in San Francisco. They look like a complete team.
They make you earn everything. They make you earn. They're fundamentally sound. They're not going to turn the ball over a lot. They're going to run the football. You know what they're going to do. They're going to run the football. They're going to block. They got my old line coach, Mike Solari. And I'm telling you, he's one of the best. He might not get the credit for it, but I'm telling you, this guy is very good. So I know every week that line is going to come out and play solid up front. They're going to block. They're going to be fundamentally sound. They're going to know their assignments. They're not going to give up the big play. They're not giving up the big play. They're not giving up the big play on defense. They're making you earn everything. And like you said, I think they are the most balanced. Like you said, I agree with the most balanced team. And with those weapons they have, I mean, if they start scoring 25, 30 points on people sometime, it can get ugly.
It could. It definitely could. But I will say this. They seem to be the most complete team at this point. They don't hurt themselves. They don't do anything to hurt themselves. But there is a team, there is a team in Philadelphia that even after nine turnovers, this team, number one in passing, this team, that defense is playing well. A ferocious pass rush, and they're getting it done on both sides in terms of the offense is so explosive. They have arguably the best running back in football in LeSean McCoy, and the defense has been playing very, very well. There is a team, if they can cut down on those turnovers, nine turnovers in two games is just unacceptable. You won't win in this league if you continue with that trend. But if they can clean up some of those mistakes, I see a complete team in Philadelphia. But we'll see. We'll see.
That's a big if. But, all right, and is Philadelphia's line going to hold up? Is the offensive line going to hold up? Not the defense. Is the offensive line going to hold up?
And I want to ask you about that in terms of that. You know, they're missing their left tackle, King Dunlop, with the hamstring, and they're missing their center, Jason Kelce, out for the year.
Yes.
He obviously played on the offensive line for many, many years. How important is a center to an offense?
He runs it. And other than the quarterback, the most important player on that field is the center. Nothing happens without the ball getting back to him. Nothing happens without him pointing out the linebackers where they're going in the protection mode. He is the key. He's the cog. So that's going to be the big issue with Philly is that line. All the guys getting in going to be able to step up because in some of these big games, they're going to be challenged. And they're going to have to step up and do a good job. So if we're going to say that, then I'm going to give some experience to the Giants. And the crazy thing about it was the Giants had four or five. They had two offensive linemen out the game. They had the running back out the game. They had the receiver out the game. They had four or five starters out the game last week.
Right. You're right. And they look very impressive against
and those
Carolina.
Backups, those two guys that played, the running back and the receiver that came up and played for them, looked very, very good.
Right.
Like they were trying to take somebody's job.
Definitely. And you look at the Cardinals, and we talked about the Eagles getting tested. They're going to get tested this week with Darnell Dockett and Calais Campbell on the Cardinals' defensive line. The Cardinals' defense is the reason the Cardinals are 2-0, not their quarterback play, not anything else but their defense.
Oh, they got a defense. And I'm going to tell you another thing that's going to catch up with them. If they don't start getting Wicks, Wes Welker involved, stuff like that, you can use those tight ends, but you got to stretch the field. And they let Deion Branch go. Can Tom Brady and the Patriots stretch the field this year? I don't think they have the guys to stretch the field. You know, you can go to the tight ends all day, but they're not stretching the field. You got to have somebody that can stretch the field.
And they did. They did. They actually brought back Deion Branch this week. Brought him back this week. And they also brought in Kellen Winslow to replace Hernandez at this point.
Okay. We'll see if they can stretch the field.
We'll see if they stretch the field, though. And we'll see what happens with the Patriots. We'll see what happens with the Eagles. We'll see what happens with the Cardinals. And we'll see what happens around this whole National Football League. Every week it changes. One week you think somebody's on top, and the next week you start to question them a little bit. But
I was impressed with your Eagles this week. They did get the win. I got to see the turnovers go down.
The turnovers definitely have to go down if they want to be successful moving forward. This is obviously not a recipe for success. I mean, this is definitely not the recipe for success. This is not the blueprint if you want to win football games, but sometimes stuff happens, and you got to overcome it. And Michael Vick, say what you will about him, has channeled his inner John Elway. He's number seven, John Elway with number seven. Two last-minute drives, 91 yards against Cleveland, 80 yards against the Ravens, and 2 1-point victories. But we'll see what happens this weekend. We'll see what happens without their offensive line, with their offensive line being banged up and everything. We shall see. Willie, as always, pleasure talking to you, man. And we'll see what happens next week.
All right, thank you very much. Good talking to you.
Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer. Good talking to Willie, getting his insight on all things NFL. And he talked about the Giants and the Giants. Ramses Barton came in and replaced Hakeem Nicks and was impressive. Had 100 yards at the end of the first half. And Andre Brown stepped in for Ahmad Bradshaw, and he was impressive as well. 20 carries, 113 yards and 2 touchdowns. And they stifled Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. And it was just a rout. I expected more out of Carolina this week against the Giants. I really did. I didn't expect that at all. That was a surprise. That truly was a surprise at what we saw in Carolina on Thursday night. I didn't expect the Giants to be that dominant. I was almost thinking that Carolina could win that football game, but wow. Wow. The Giants were impressive. The Giants went in there and just played some great, great football. And Eli, to Willie Rose's point, you arguably could be talking about the best player, best quarterback, I should say, in football when it comes to Eli Manning. You might be talking about the best quarterback in football. He went against Tom Brady. He went against Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he went through the best, arguably the top two quarterbacks in football last year to get his title. And he beat Matt Ryan, who you could argue is a top 10 quarterback. So you could argue that he beat three of the top 10 quarterbacks in his playoff run last year. Three of them. And then he's picked up where he left off this season. 510-yard performance against the Buccaneers, and another impressive performance against the Carolina Panthers. We got to start. Not only is he the best quarterback in his family at this point, and maybe when it's all said and done, he could be the best quarterback in his family. And I thought I would never say that. But two Super Bowl titles and the numbers that he's putting up, I thought I would never say that. But maybe he arguably could be the best Manning period, better than his dad, better than his brother when it's all said and done. And who would have ever thought that, especially off that year he came off that 2 years ago where he threw all those interceptions, and then he came back, and before the start of the year, he said, you know what, I'm an elite quarterback. I'm one of those guys. I'm one of those dudes. Put me in a conversation with Rodgers. Put me in a conversation with Brees. Put me in a conversation with my brother. Put me in a conversation with Brady. Put me in that conversation. And you know what he did? He went out, and he made me and a lot of other people put his name in that conversation. We had no choice but to put his name in that conversation. I had no choice. I had no choice. His name is in that conversation now. And to Willie Rowe's point, he arguably could be the best quarterback in football. He could be the best quarterback in football. He's playing like it. He truly is playing like the best quarterback in football right now. Playing like the best quarterback in football. And I can't really argue with anything that Willie Rowe said when it comes to Peyton Manning. Not Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. The Manning family. It makes you always want to try to get some of that Manning blood and see if you can use it to birth a quarterback yourself. I mean, Archie, Eli, and Peyton. I mean, it makes me want to get a little bit of that Manning blood, a little bit of that Manning sperm to try to make a Manning myself, a Manning Gant, I should say, and get a quarterback myself. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know the percentage of terms of NFL players in terms of the population of this whole world, and to have it with one family, to get it all in one family, to get arguably one of the better quarterbacks in this game right now, I mean two of the better quarterbacks in this game right now, to get that at the same time in one family, you know how hard that is statistically? You know how hard that is statistically to make that happen? That's a very hard thing to do, a very, very hard thing to do. But the Mannings have done it. The Mannings have done it. Started with his daddy and on to Peyton and Eli and Cooper. Cooper Manning also was a quarterback. He had some injuries and forced him to end his career, but he was a talented quarterback as well. All that in that Manning blood. All that. And moving to baseball now, the pennant races are heating up. The Yankees still holding a one-game lead on the Orioles right now. Yankees with a walk-off victory last night. And the Yankees, I mean, Baltimore is a great story. And the Yankees, and this has been a great battle these last few weeks. But for some reason, I just get the sense that like, the Yankees will hold on. They will hold on at this point. I think they will. And at this point, they are one game up. I just expect the Yankees to hold on. I expect Yankee magic to show itself moving forward. I just think the Yankees they're slightly the better team, and I think they'll hold on. And we'll see. And I forecast the whole White Sox and Tigers race a week ago. I said based on schedule, the Tigers will win that division. And right now, the Tigers are 1.5 games back of the White Sox. A lot of 13 games to play. So a lot of games to be played. Not a lot. 13 games is really not a lot. But enough games to be played where this division could change. Enough games to be played where this division can change. And also, I'm looking at the National League now. And the St. Louis Cardinals still clinging to that second wild card spot. The Milwaukee Brewers have been playing some great baseball of late. They're there. They're moving up. They're trying to catch them, trying to nip them. At the end, the Cardinals lost in walk-off fashion to the Cubs in extra innings. The Milwaukee Brewers beat the Nationals in extra innings, a comeback victory for those guys. They were down 2-1 in the ninth, and they got a comeback victory against the Washington Nationals. And then the Phillies. They win, and the Dodgers win as well. The Phillies, 3 games back. Dodgers, 2 games back. And so So it looks like it's going to come down to St. Louis, Milwaukee, L.A., and Philadelphia during this final week. Philly has a tough schedule. Philly has a tough, tough schedule. They beat the Braves last night, but they have two more against the Braves, and they play the Nationals as well coming up. So they have a tough, tough, tough schedule moving forward, a tough schedule moving forward. So you wonder if they'll be done because of this schedule. I mean, two against Atlanta, three against Washington, then you got three against Miami, and then you conclude with three more against Washington. So you got eight games against the top two teams of your division, the top wild card team in Atlanta, and the top team in the National League East with the Washington Nationals. And then you sandwich in three games with the Miami Marlins. So it's going to be a tough stretch for Philly. It's going to be a tough stretch for Philly, and you wonder if they'll fall off because of that tough stretch. But I will say this. Never doubt Philadelphia. I will say this also. This is a team that lost 3 out of 4 to the Houston Astros last weekend in Houston. You really don't deserve to make the playoffs after losing 3 out of 4 to a team that's 50 games below 500 to a team I nicknamed Sub 50. Sub 50, that's what I nicknamed the Houston Astros. Sub 50. 50 plus games below 500. You cannot lose to a team 3 out of 4 times. 50, who is 50 plus games below 500. You can't do that. That's just unacceptable. 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 So we'll see. We'll see if the Phillies can continue to make an improbable run. We'll see if the Phillies can continue to make an improbable run. But you wonder with the Phillies again, what they would have been like if Howard and Utley, their 3-4 hitters, you wonder the middle of their lineup, probably their two best players, you wonder what would have happened if those guys were here the whole time. It really is what it is at this point, but you wonder. But again, Milwaukee is playing some good baseball, and the Phillies have to overcome two teams. Well, three teams, including the Cardinals, but they have to leapfrog the Dodgers and the Brewers to get to the second spot. So it's going to be some tough work for Philadelphia, and judging by their schedule, Nationals for 6 games and 2 more against Atlanta, sandwiched in by 3 games against the Miami Marlins. Judging by their schedule, it's going to be a difficult proposition for the Phillies. But we'll see. We'll see. No one expected this team to be in this position anyway. I mean, this is a team that was 14 games under 500 at the All-Star break and essentially left for dead. And they took advantage of a weak schedule. They had 13 games against teams below 500. You take advantage of who you got to play and take advantage of your schedule, and they did that. But moving forward, again, their schedule is not going to be favorable. Not going to be very favorable. Again, 6 games against the Nationals, 2 more against the Braves starting today, and 3 more with the Miami Marlins, a bad baseball team, very bad baseball team. So maybe you make the headway there. We'll see, but they can't afford to lose many more games. They cannot afford to lose many more games. And I said this last week, and I'll say it again. Atlanta, Washington, San Francisco, Cincinnati, you don't want to see this Philadelphia Phillies team in the playoffs. You don't want to see that, because if they're in the playoffs with that pitching staff in a short series, anything can happen. You don't want to see that team. No one can throw out the type of pitching, starting pitchers that the Phillies can. Hamels, Holiday, and Lee. There's not many who can throw that out there. So you, if you're one of those teams, don't want that to happen. You don't want that to happen. You just don't. You just don't. And luckily for those teams, I don't think it will happen. So I think they'll be safe. They will be safe. Because I don't think Philly can overcome three. I don't think they can do it. They have to leapfrog two teams just to get to St. Louis. And I just don't think it will happen. But we'll see. We shall see. And the Nationals are in, and it's great times in Washington. A lot of people knew, looked at this roster and said this was a talented roster, said this was a team that could win the National League East and dethrone the Phillies in the National League East. And they did that. They did that. It did help that the Phillies were banged up throughout the course of this year. That helped in Washington. That helped the Nationals win that division. Not to say they wouldn't have won it even if the Phillies were healthy, but it helps. It definitely helps. It definitely helps. So Washington's a team, again, with the talent that they have, you're going to have to watch out for. But to me, it's going to come down to who's the hottest team. Last year, it came down to who was the hottest team. Philly was the best team, but St. Louis was the hottest team. St. Louis was the hottest team, and the hottest team is what won and ultimately got to the World Series and won the World Series. It's not the best team, it's the hottest team. To me, and even in the NFL, the best team last year was the Green Bay Packers. The hottest team was the New York Giants. The hottest team won. Again, it wasn't the best team, it was the hottest team. And the hottest team was the New York Giants. And the hottest team last year in baseball was the St. Louis Cardinals. Not the best team, it's the hottest team. And we'll see who's the hottest team. The hottest team will be the team that I think will get to the World Series. But we'll see what happens. We shall see what happens. And much has been made over the past few weeks about the replacement refs and some of the calls that they made. And, you know, it is what it is. It still hasn't cost the team a ball game at this point. Yes, they made some mistakes. In Philly, they made some mistakes. In Atlanta, they made some mistakes. I mean, they made some mistakes throughout the league. But I think their mistakes are getting magnified because they're not the real refs, the quote-unquote real refs, that are replacement refs. And I think those mistakes are getting magnified, and I think people, or any chance they get, any opportunity they get, they're going to try to say, oh, if the refs make a mistake, they're going to magnify it. Now, I'm not saying that they're, I mean, obviously you want the best to do it, to be doing it. You want the best to do it, to be doing it. You want that. But you're not getting that right now with these refs. These are not the best refs. The best refs are in their homes right now, and at this point, they seem to be far off in terms of a contract. Both sides seem to be far off in terms of an agreement. So we're going to be seeing these refs for the near future. We're going to be seeing these refs for now. So the reality is we better get used to it. We better get used to it. And at the end of the day, no matter how they get there, it's all about getting the call right, right? And yes, you could argue some of the calls weren't right, but did it cause anybody a football game? Did it cause anybody to lose a football game? You could argue possibly that it's in terms of safety, it's not the best idea. Maybe it's not. But when did the NFL really care about safety? Does the NFL really, really care about safety? They may say they do. They may try to do things to make you believe that they do. But the reality is, if no team is losing, the shield is bigger than all of it. The NFL shield is bigger than anything. So if no teams are losing games because of poor officiating, because of a blown call, because of four timeouts in Seattle, no one lost. The Cardinals still won that game. In terms of a spot in the game against the Broncos, the Falcons still won that game. The Broncos benefited from the spot, but the Falcons still won the game. So as far as I'm concerned, yes, we can complain all we want about the lack of the replacement for refs and everything. We can complain all we want. We can continue to complain. But the thing is, as of right now, and we can pick on the refs, and it looks like the players are doing a good job of that. A lot of players are making various comments, and the league has warned players about being verbally abusive to the refs. We can blame the refs and all that. But these guys, if you want to blame someone, blame your commissioner, Roger Goodell, and let's get this straightened up. Let's get this right. You talk about player safety. you talk about wanting the players to be safe on the field. If people are getting competitive advantages and doing certain things that you know, that cause a competitive advantage, then how, and it causes that competitive advantage, you could ultimately, someone could get hurt. Someone could get hurt from a blown call in terms of a player leading with his head or a player hitting a defenseless receiver. Someone could get hurt if these calls aren't made because, you know, the player's going to think maybe I can get away with it. Maybe they'll get fined at some point, but they won't get a penalty. They won't get that penalty. But as of right now, the referees in the NFL, in terms of an agreement seems very far off. These two sides are a little far off right now. So in terms of agreement, who knows? They did not make progress yesterday, according to sources. No progress in the talks that they had yesterday. None. No progress being made. And players are talking. You got Matthias Kiwanuka talking about it. And he was quoted as saying, quote, there is no doubt the integrity of the game has been compromised. Not having any irregular officials out there. We got to get that taken care of. Of course. That goes without saying. You got to get it taken care of, and we'll see if the NFL does the right thing and gets it taken care of. I'm going to switch gears now, and I want to move to boxing. And we're going to bring in a guy who knows a lot about the sport of boxing, talk about the great fight last week in last week in Las Vegas. Let's bring him in now, writer for BoxingScene.com, the one, the only, Cliff Rold. Cliff, how are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. It's no good college football games on yet, so not missing anything.
And let's talk about some good boxing, I should say. We saw a lot of good boxing last weekend in Vegas. Let's start with Sergio Martinez and Julio Chavez Jr. For 11 rounds, Cliff, Martinez was giving Chavez a boxing lesson. Then out of nowhere, he got caught. Ultimately, he survived. But Chavez, I think he salvaged his rep by that last round. Your thoughts on what you saw last week?
Well, I mean, salvaged it, yes, in the sense that he showed, you know, he was still viable to pull off that sort of upset or come close in the 12th round. But I think he also may have cemented some of his reputation as well, especially when you factor in some of the press that's come out confirming some of the bad rumors about his training camp, nonsense about training in his living room, not going to the gym, not to mention, you know, getting popped on his second weed bust, you know, in a drug test. I think it confirmed to a lot of people that what you're dealing with here is sort of a spoiled ingenue. He's got the talent, but his dedication to the craft is not what it should be. And that 12th round is sort of a microcosm of the fighter that could be and the fighter that isn't.
And you talked about the positive drug test for Chavez Jr., the second positive test in Nevada. What will be the consequences now for Chavez?
Well, recent history shows that on a second negative test, you get a longer suspension. Last time he got a few months. I can't remember exactly how many. There's speculation of anywhere from 8 months to a year. You know, we'll see. You know, it's kind of an odd thing. I mean, it's hard to argue that weed is a performance enhancing drug, which is ultimately what they're trying to wean people away from in the sport. But I mean, you know the rules, and how stupid do you have to be to have that in your system in time for a piss test? It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Not at all. And then you would think weed would do the opposite effect in terms of your hunger making you hungry. Thus, you'll eat a lot, and thus you'll have a hard time cutting weight.
Well, I mean, you know, we saw what he looked like at the weigh-in. He looked like Skeletor up on the scale. You know, he clearly had significantly bulked up by fight time. They didn't do a pre-fight weigh-in like they normally do on HBO. He wouldn't step on a scale. So we don't know, but, I mean, recent history says Chavez usually rehydrates from the middleweight division into, you know, just outside the light heavyweight division, high 170s, low 180s. And I think that had a lot to do with the 12th round, too. You know, if you got 15, 20 pounds on a guy and you catch him right, it doesn't really matter what round it is. You know, you put these fights back in the day where you got to weigh in on the day of the fight. You know, the thing is, Sergio Martinez looked ready to go on Friday. He could have fought Friday. Chavez needed that extra day to rehydrate. In the old days, I don't think you get that 12th round. Chavez might have been slaughtered just because of what he did to make weight. And you know, that's part and parcel for something that I think is wrong with boxing, which is it encourages guys to fight one, two weight divisions more than they really should be, more than is healthy. It encourages the use of diuretics. If not implicitly, then, you know, it's there. And I think those are things to worry about. But, I mean, that said, you know, if you plop down your $50 to watch the fight, you got your money's worth in the last 3 minutes after a dull night. So what more can you say?
You're right. And ultimately, will we see a rematch at some point?
You know, I would have been more optimistic about the rematch if not for two things. One, the drug bust, of course. That's going to put him on the shelf for a while. Now, whether the Nevada suspension would stick everywhere else, given the amount of money that Chavez is proving he can generate. I mean, this was a very successful promotion. They packed the house at the Thomas and Mack. They did almost $500,000 on pay-per-view. You know, that's right at the level that Felix Trinidad was at his peak. And I think Chavez's fan base is still growing. So you've got an economic monster growing here. We'll see if the suspension sticks. Bigger concern could be, you know, rumors after the, you know, word after the fight that Sergio Martinez had a broken hand and he had some knee ligament damage. That could push the rematch back. If you push it back too far, how does Chavez make 160 safely? I mean, he's already killing himself to do it. Another year, given lax training habits, sort of a lazy head case, really, is what you're dealing with here. I'm not sure that you can physically make that fight unless you make Martinez go above the limit and fight a non-title fight.
And Sergio really couldn't make – well, he wouldn't be at his best at 168.
Well, I mean, he could be at his best, but his best would mean coming into a fight at 168 or, at, say, a catch weight of 164, 165, still coming in around 159, 160. You don't want to put much more weight on him. Martinez's whole game is reflexes and speed. He's 37 years old. You don't want to put bulk on him at this point in his life. He doesn't have that much shelf life as it is.
You're right, and let's go down the road now in Las Vegas. You had Canelo Alvarez, and a fight that, you know, I mean, Joselito Lopez, a guy who is coming up basically from 140. And you look at this fight, Alvarez dominated, not unexpected. Did we learn anything from Canelo this weekend?
Yeah, we learned what we already knew about Canelo, that he can beat welterweights pretty good if at a certain talent level. I mean, Canelo Alvarez... there has to be some sort of apology for him in the sense that he was scheduled to fight a much tougher fight. You know, if Paul Williams hadn't been injured over the summer, you know, his tragic injury putting him in a wheelchair, he was slated to take that fight, actually would have favored Williams in that fight. So that was a real fight. They tried to make a James Kirkland fight, couldn't get it together. So they went with the story fight, you know, the guy who just beat Ortiz. Unfortunately, you know, it wasn't a real fight in the ring. I mean, Lopez was carrying what looked like love handles just to make the weight. You know, he was able to fight back, but he didn't have the physical strength to compete. You know, I think it's time, even though Canelo was supposed to fight someone tougher this time, it's time to make sure he fights someone tougher next time. He's had a little bit of a gilded career here. They're building a promotion as much as a fighter. But, I mean, he got his belt by fighting an unranked welterweight, Matthew Hatton. I mean, you know, some of this is a little ridiculous. It's time to see him against junior middleweights. It's time to see the kid tested. Or, you know, just be honest about it and say, hey, we're not ready to run him out like that yet.
And one of the guys that he possibly could face next in a lot of talk has been Mikel Cotto. If Cotto can get by Austin Trout, Canelo could be next for him. Where do you see Canelo going after this fight, though?
Well, I mean, I think Canelo is a good fighter, and I think he will succeed against certain, you know, higher quality junior middleweights. I mean, one of the nice things about the division, it's not super skilled across the board outside of, you know, maybe Floyd Mayweather. Austin Trout's got some skill level, and he's a real live, he's a real live fighter against Miguel Cotto. That is a very dangerous fight for Cotto. But I think, you know, given that a lot of what makes junior middleweight entertaining is that there's so many sluggers in the division, Alvarez is going to do well there because he has a good jab, he goes to the body really well, and so far he's shown a pretty good chin. So, you know, you put him in with guys like James Kirkland eventually, you know, Cornelius Bundridge, he's going to excel there. What I think you have to keep him away from and what you may not be able to avoid is the Cuban, Arislandi Lara. I think Lara is the best fighter at junior middleweight. He's the most talented. He has an eliminator coming up against Bonas Martirosyan that is supposed to declare Alvarez's mandatory. If Alvarez takes that mandatory, he loses.
We're talking to BoxingScene.com writer Cliff Rold. And Cliff, two great shows in the same night, in the same city, on two different networks. Bottom line, good or bad for boxing?
Great. I wrote this before. People complain a lot about counter-programming, and I understand why. But if you're going to counter-program, give people two programs, two quality programs. I sit regularly and watch. I'll have ESPN3 on my computer and two TVs going on college football Saturdays, and then there's other games on other channels, and you can flip around. That's a great thing. There were fights that weren't that great on Saturday. While Daniel Ponce de Leon and Johnny Gonzalez was disappointing people on Showtime, you could flip the channel over to HBO pay-per-view and see a nice scrap between Rocky Martinez and Miguel Beltran. That was a good fight. When the Rigondeaux fight and some of the other and the Macklin-Alcine fight kind of were sizzled on the HBO pay-per-view, you could switch over to Showtime and watch Marcos Maidana and Jesus Soto Carras beat the hell out of each other. That's great. I mean, I don't have a problem with counter-programming when it's like that. When counter-programming is bad is when you have two dull shows that are completely promoter-bought and you don't have good fights on either show. But if you give people good fights, there's nothing wrong with switching back and forth on the channels. People have PIT, people have DVR. It's a hollow complaint. And frankly, it was a rousing success for the sport when you consider that Showtime did a monster number on TV, something like a million viewers, which was a record rating they're claiming. You had 475,000 buys for Chavez Jr., which exceeds what a lot of people expected. I actually thought it would do around 500 given media coverage, but I think that number surprised a lot of people. And you had over 30,000 fans butts in the seats between the two venues. I mean, how is that anything but a success? And ESPN, this can't be talked about enough, and I think it's been overlooked. ESPN and HBO have a new output deal, which allows for some better cross-promotion. Well, that meant that the Chavez knockdown of Martinez was a highlight on SportsCenter. For the last 20 years, fans who wanted to see highlights of boxing tuned into SportsCenter and saw stills. They saw photographs. Well, who the hell cares about a photograph? The night Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield on the ear, they wound up suing because the news showed the highlights. Those highlights need to be out there. We live in a sports highlight culture. We live in a soundbite culture. UFC has been very smart about this, about letting their results be shown on TV live right after the fight. If HBO can do more of that, boxing can only grow its fan base.
And hopefully boxing will continue to grow its fan base. And Cliff, another fight that is going to happen in December, Manny Pacquiao, Juan Manuel Marquez, for the fourth time. A lot of people are questioning whether or not this fight should happen again. What are your thoughts on this particular fight? Should it happen again?
Look, there's two ways. There's two answers to that. One, do I care if they fight again? Not really. I mean, I wasn't begging to see it. I actually would have preferred the Bradley rematch, but I understand this will probably be a little more exciting. I would have preferred if Mayweather and Pacquiao are ever really going to fight, Pacquiao just wait till Mayweather's ready next year. But if they want to do this, great. I mean, all three of their fights have been good. They've all made a ton of money. People tune in to watch them, so I don't see that as a negative. I think some of the complaining you're hearing out there, there is a been there, done that feeling to it. That's one. And two, boxing fans just like to complain a lot. They're fairly nihilistic. I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody. The sport has a way of kicking its fans a lot, and so, their reactions tend to be negative. It's sort of a love-hate relationship because of some of the idiosyncrasies of boxing that can be negative. So, I think people will tune in December. They'll enjoy the fight, and if we get something like the first three, everybody will love it.
Would you have rather seen the Cotto Pacquiao rematch?
No, not really. I mean, I saw that fight already. I think Marquez is more competitive with Pacquiao. Cotto Pacquiao was a great fight for four rounds and a wipeout for eight. Now, that doesn't mean it wouldn't be a better fight now. I think Pacquiao has slowed down. He doesn't throw as many punches. He's getting older. Maybe that would have made it a more physical fight. But Cotto is still a guy who, his chin has been dented. He still gets hurt. I don't see a change in result there. Whereas with Marquez and Pacquiao, you have not only their history, but the entire history of sort of their Fab Four with Morales and Barrera. I don't have a problem with adding another chapter to that. It's been the most enriching four-way rivalry of our lifetime, of this 50 generation. Excuse me, I shouldn't skip the 1980s. I'm sort of glossing over one there.
And Cliff, you talked about Mayweather. Will we see? And I know that it's dying down a little bit, but there's still people out here who still want to see this fight. Will we see Pacquiao Mayweather in 2013?
Maybe. I'll be honest. I'm one of those who, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, I don't really care anymore. I think the window for what made that fight as special as it could have been was that at one point you had the two very best fighters in the world, clearly, in their absolute prime, in the same weight class. That was special. At this point, you've got a 33-year-old who in Pacquiao who's kind of slowing down. You've got a Mayweather at 35 who's kind of slowing down. They're still right up at the top of the game. But I don't think it's clear that they're the two best fighters in the world anymore. I think Andre Ward is making a hell of a case that he's mm-hmm. better than either of them right now. And the strongest point in his favor is that he's in his prime, and he's only getting better. If everyone in the sport was the same size, I think he'd be the guy right now. And I think we've lost the window of what made the fight as special as it could have been. It would still be special because it's the two of them, and you can still have great theater in older fighters. I mean, think Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns the second time. That was a great fight. It could still be special. It would still mean a hell of a lot to both of their legacies, but it ain't what it could have been, and that's a shame.
And, Cliff, talk about some of the great things going on at BoxingScene.com.
Well, today a lot of the focus is going to be on a big fight over in the U.K. between a Scottish fighter, Ricky Burns, and another guy from the U.K. named Kevin Mitchell. Good, solid fight for fans out there who like to look up Sunday, see what happened in the rest of the world on YouTube. I think a lot of the focus is going to start to shift to October 13th, that awesome card with Brandon Rios, Mike Alvarado, and Nonito Donaire versus Toshiaki Nishioka. For folks out there who don't know those names, find out who they are. Get yourself to a TV on October 13th. That could be one of the best nights of boxing in a long time. And then, you know, you've got in November, you've got Anselmo Moreno fighting Abner Morris at 122 pounds. That's going to be a special fight. And there's some really good stuff happening toward the end of the year.
Definitely, definitely. And we're looking forward to it. Cliff, as always, pleasure talking to you, man. Wish you nothing but the best of luck. And as always, let's do it again.
Absolutely. Look forward to talking to you, Paul.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. A lot of great things going on in the sport of boxing. And Cliff brought up a great point. Is it bad counter-programming? Is it a bad thing for boxing? Well, it turned out to be a pretty good thing for boxing, because a lot of people were talking about boxing, and if you're talking about boxing, that's a great thing for boxing. A lot of people were talking about boxing, and a lot of people came out and saw two great fights, and Alvarez in terms of the main event wasn't a great fight, but they saw some good fights on the undercard, and they saw some good fights in the Thomas and Mack Center with Chavez Jr. and Sergio Martinez. So anybody that says the sport of boxing is dead and that boxing is dead to me, and should be dead. I mean, because boxing is not dead. It's not alive and well. It's kicking. It's alive and well. Alive and well. So you look forward to some of the great things that's going to happen near the end of the year. Pacquiao, Marquez, Cotto and Austin Trout. A great card at the Barclays Center in New York City, Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn is going to be a hub for boxing. I mean, and maybe they'll take some business away from Madison Square Garden. But Brooklyn, you got a great card there with Danny Garcia and Eric Morales. Then you got Devin Alexander also on that card against Randall Bailey. Paulie Malignaggi on that card as well. So a lot of great fights on that particular card in October. So I may even be there, so we'll see. I want to thank Cliff Rold from BoxingScene.com. Make sure you check out some of the great things BoxingScene.com has going on. A lot of great things, a lot of great articles. If you love the sport of boxing, you need to go and check out BoxingScene.com. Great place to listen and read about the sport of boxing. Also want to thank the great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer. He had some great insight on here today. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGain. We will be back next week hard, hitting it hard and talking sports and having fun doing it. For those who didn't hear, we have a new theme song. I'm going to play that theme song now. Tell me what you think, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter, at GoForItCant. For everybody here at GoForItCant, everybody here at GoForIt, see you later. Take care. Bye. And listen to this theme song. Tell me if you like it.